John's father was a great automobile man. Among his prized early positions was a general chairman car. In those days, they were quite sophisticated. And on our graduation times, there's a bit emotional about this. Three or four of us decided we were going to Torquay and swim. John's father lent him the car. So that was a big privilege because John's father would very hard to prize the car out of. Anyway, we decided we'd camp at Torquay. There was nothing there in those days. So John had a tent and he had homemade tent poles, which were too long to go in the javelin. So he roped them underneath the javelin, sticking out the back and front. That was all very well. And then we got to Geelong. We decided we'd have a stop in the main street. We got out and we realised there was a fire somewhere. The two poles had been on the side of the muffler and they were on fire. Under John's father's new car, it was a very nice car. With the aid of fire extinguishers, we were able to control that situation, cut the rope, leave the van poles behind, and had a very enjoyable time talking. Let's jump umpteen years ahead of that. Joe and I were in London, John was in London, and we were having a party in a flat that we shared in South Kensington. Joan had never met John before, because she was one of my new acquisitions. Unfortunately, she will be here today, but she's ill at the moment and can't make it. Anyway, in the height of the party, suddenly the party died. And I didn't know what was going on, so I went to the front door, and someone had answered the front door, and standing in the doorway was a gentleman who nobody knew, dressed in a very nice suit, but with a clerical collar on. And here was this man with a clerical collar, a loose collar, and of course they opened the door and the party died. Oh my gosh. So I went down to see what the problem was, and I said, "Oh, hello John, what are you doing here?" And here was John dressed as a parson, breaking into our party, and that was the first time Sharon, my wife, ever met him. And that, I could tell thousands of these stories, but they're all in the same venue. He had a fantastic sense of humour, and I won't go on because I've been here all night. Okay, thank you.
Well, I've known John for about 80 years, and I have a whole lot of memories which I would bore you still by the time I've finished, I think. But I first met John when my father and John were both on the dental board, and we went down, and he was this old church which John's father had just renovated, and we were playing football, and I remember, I think it was John kicked it out on the road and it burst, and John's father was saying, "Well, I think we can fix that," but he never did. But we met also going through the course, most of the friends there were during the course, four I can count, I think. And John was a keen skier, and we went up with Len Ryder, who we usually stopped at Millamart to gain supplies on the way up there. John Senior used to take us round with big vats. There was no guest sort of area at that stage, and they keep on telling us, try this vat or that vat, and it was all on a concrete floor. By the time we'd finished all the vats, we just lay down on the floor and wait until tomorrow, the next morning. And we went on skiing. We did, I remember one day I was having a lesson and John came skiing up. The lesson was lined up in about 12 or so. John came skiing up just to see what was going on. Got to the top of the liner, fell over, knocked down every wire. And George, who was an Austrian with a very good command of English, just looked at it and said, a strike, yes? And we went over. At one stage we wanted to walk back from Hotham to Falls Creek. There were no helicopters in those days, so was Len Ryder and myself and John put on our skis and walked over, and halfway across we came to this creek running across.
Pretty Valley Bondage.
It was the beginning of Pretty Valley Bondage.
Oh, right.
And we were looking for an ice cap to go across, but we couldn't find one. And in the end, John said, we've got to do it. So there we were. Fortunately, there was wide open space of snow, no one around. We stripped off, carried everything across this creek, and it was bitterly cold, and we stood on the other side, and we all had the same sensation. We're absolutely glowing from coming out of this freezing cold water, and we all started laughing. It was an unusual sensation. Then I don't know, but I was very pleased to have John at St. Vincent's. He did an enormous amount of work there, and I appreciated that very much.
My name is John Fuller, and Helen and I used to see a lot of John and Nolene at Sorrento, and in those days we had our families with us, and it was great fun. We went to all the beaches around the place, and I can remember very clearly one balmy summer's evening. We were all on the lookout at the south beach at Sorrento, you know, the lookout on the far end of the beach, and John told us a limerick. And this is the limerick that he said. There was a young fella from Sydney who put it in up to the kidney. A chap from the west put his into the chest. He had a big one, didn't he?
He's obviously no sleep function. So I'm just wondering with the microphone, and I'm not going to give him one quadrant of the room.
Shelley and our whole family all down there, and I remember eating spaghetti. We're all looking at our food, eating away, and Robin goes, sucks their piece of spaghetti up. And we all look up because Grandpa's had this big shock, and he's got this big spaghetti hanging off his glasses. We're all sitting there going, oh no, what's this reaction going to be? Robin's doing this bloody big grin she always does. And then all of a sudden he picks up another past her and throws it straight back at her. You're all left there going, oh God. And it ended up in a terrific food fight. That was wonderful. Yeah, he was always very amusing. There was another time we were all walking around the bush. I think most of the cousins were there. And we came across this big log that was across the whole path. And Grandpa thought it was a marvellous idea that all the cousins grab a little bit of this log and carry it about 5 km or more back for firewood, because of course there's no firewood when they're camping around in the camp area. So he promised us all a paddle pop at the other end, and I don't know if we got a paddle pop, but we're all exhausted and slept very well that night. So,
and it can be very brief.
G'day everyone, I'm Dick Williams, I'm from Darwin. I don't go back 60 or 70 years, but 40, close to, when I met the girls at college, so I sort of represent the next generation down. I was in fact at Ridley College for 2 or 3 years. Most of it is no longer there. I was there the other day, a very, very nostalgic time. I've also been up and down through Campbell over the last couple of months, and we had an enforced period down in Melbourne. And a lot of these slides were tripped down through my life as well, so it's been fantastic seeing the high country. I did my PhD up there. The snow, the beach. I got salt water in my veins too. It's an extraordinary remembrance. But I do remember the first feed I had at Murdoch Street. It was fantastic. A classic Melbourne meal. There was fine wine on the table. Probably a Beethoven late quartet at the end of it. And of course, the first time you go around to Murdoch Street, sea lions and seals. So I haven't forgotten. I was driving up Elba Road the other day, and I happened to be listening to 3BSFM, and there was a story about Sir Edward Elba, who was also a very, very keen cyclist. So John Heath, Edward Elba mixed the bikes and mixed the music. So John, we miss you. Fantastic bloke, fantastic family. Thank you very much.
Wanted to say was pretty much along the lines of what's been said, but because it's my favourite memories, I want to say it. So my favourite memories, French poetry, great wine, skiing and sailing. Dad was great at picking up languages and used to pass himself off in many countries as a bit of a native. And his memory and love of languages had us finding a lot of his favourite French poems on his computer the other day. He would recite them at times, and of course we didn't know what they meant, but then he would tell us, not just rote memory. I was spoilt for wines, not realising when I was growing up how lucky I was, and not really wanting to drink cheap wine anywhere now. Such a wonderful part of our lives, and such a pleasure. We learned to appreciate the completeness of a meal with a beautiful wine. The exhilaration of learning to ski and be out in the wild, wonderful mountains was such a gift, and the thrill of being on the water in a boat with Dad was equally exciting. The spray and the wind in our faces. We were in the races with a chance every day in the summer and every weekend we could be there also. Dear Dad, we're so grateful for his living example of living life to the full.
Look, I'd just like to say very few words on behalf of my brother Michael, myself. We were always very close to John, and up until probably 3 weeks before he died, we always had a lunch together. And John was very fond of dumplings. I can't stand dumplings, but you know, John always had that extra dumping. So just on behalf of Michael and myself, we all loved each other.
First swimming pool went into the neighborhood. I remember the big structure going into the house and the many days of joy and delight in that swimming pool. I remember the upstairs being built and us playing upstairs with the girls' rooms upstairs. And I remember that wine cellar too going in. Many, many fond memories.
I'm Alan Clark and I'm a member of the Baldwin Central Preppers Club, and there are a good many of us here today because John was a very significant member of our group. I don't know how long he was there, perhaps somebody might be able to help me with the number of years. 18 years. Now that's a jolly good lot of years to be a member. And not only was he a member, but he was a very active person in our Preppers Club. I can thank him because he introduced me, and he let me know fairly soon on that he didn't believe in God, because my background was a minister of religion, and we used to have some wonderful talks together, and I used to go around and visit him after Nolene died, and he still owes me a meal, actually.
There's something in the freezer.
Yes, Nolene had gone, and my wife had gone over to America, and so I said to him, look, you know, it's stupid, us old blokes just being on our own, so why don't you come around to my place and have a meal, and I'll cook you a roast, and you can cook me a meal. And anyway, he said, oh, I'll do it first. And somehow or other, a family, he had another thing that he had to go to. So I said, oh, you come around to my place. So we had a roast at my place, and I'm still waiting for the return invitation. I'm going to miss out on that. But John was in just about everything, I think, in the Preppers Club. I don't know whether Gary probably could tell us more about him. Are you going to say something?
I can.
You can? Well, perhaps I leave all the details. He's our numbers man and names man and history man, so he'll know all about that. But I appreciate it very much. Riding bikes with John and chatting and dropping in when we were going around the block for a walk and things like that. It was really great.
In my dear brother John's company, I was felt extraordinarily secure. And he made me feel really marvellous every time we got together. I felt very little else. It's just a special thing.
Thanks, George. Just following on from what Alan said before, John was a very active member of our club for 18 years. So that I actually put together a tribute for the bulletin each month when a member has passed away. So John's will be pretty long. He was a member of our walking group. Back in 97, he organised a group, a walk in Warrandyte, with the choice of a short or longer walk with Billy T provided by his wife. Not sure whether Nolene actually went out there and boiled the Billy or what, but something might be able to tell me that later on. He hosted a meeting of a computer learning group at which people would learn about email and the internet back in 2000. He was a regular member of our discussion group. He led a discussion, the topic of course was wine, He brought along a few bottles, which I'm told went down very well, and encouraged everybody to become wine drinkers rather than beer drinkers. Probably his favourite would have been the caravan and camping group. We've heard a lot about the trip that he and Nolene went on. He was on every trip almost for well over a decade. And if you go through the photographs going back to, I think, to 2007, you'll always find the photo of John Farrelly enjoying himself on one of those trips. But all the groups he belonged to, he was a member of many groups. One of the things he took on was the job of producing the club bulletin. If I can quote what he wrote in his very first edition, he said, "Having just taken over producing the bulletin, I feel like a mother with her firstborn new baby. Remember how little you knew and how insecure you felt as the father of the neonate. Well, I beg your forgiveness." And I had difficulty finding a definition of the word forgiveness because Google says forgiveness, but he used the word forgiveness. "There is no doubt that the style will evolve, but favourable evolution depends on encouragement." Well, the style did evolve. It was very readable, very entertaining, and John actually did the job for 7 years, and we all enjoyed getting the bulletin. There are a lot of Probians here today, and I think I can speak on behalf of all of them. We're going to miss John at our meetings. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Deb, I'm with Angelton. My last memory of Grandpa was a really strong one. Just last week, we had a big family birthday party for all the birthday people in September, and Grandpa, when I first got there, he was lying there and just looked around and said, I'm lucky to have you, Bob. And I'm just thinking now how lucky we all are to have each other and to have had Grandpa, and like every year since I was born, we've been getting together for Christmases, and just it's such a beautiful family to be a part of. Really miss having Grandpa and his sense of humour around, but I think, you know, as long as we're all laughing and having a good time, we're going to keep remembering him every time we do.
I'm just another member of the Popers Club, and filling Gary in, John insisted on this walk that we be at a certain place in the bush at a certain time, not to tell us what it was. But when we got there, of course, it was Nolan, and she'd spread out this tablecloth and everything like that, with thermoses and everything for morning tea. Now, I've been with Probus 13 odd years, and I've been active with what we call the Woodies group. And John is a member of that, and he had the reputation of being eccentric and curious. Eccentric because he used to bring us bits and pieces and ask us how to put it together, and we'd ask him, "What are you going to do with it?" "Well, not particularly, I just wanted to know how it all went together." And the last meeting that John was at, it was not so long ago, he brought this battery drill. And he wanted to know, did anybody have a battery for it, or where could we get a battery? And we explained to him that the cost of getting a battery would be about three times more what this thing is worth. Why didn't you go and buy a new one? And he said, "Oh, well, I just wanted to find out how it worked and whether it was possible to reclaim it."
School together when Clifford wasn't the beast, when it's sophisticated that he is today. And I don't have specific memories, I have a montage of memories, but one thing that I really got from John, I think, was this feeling of a marriage of European elan and sophistication with Australian informality and practicality. And it was a great thing to be exposed to. It was lovely to be in an environment where, as a teenager, my intellectual ideas and my aesthetic ideas were taken seriously, and that was a great gift.
I'm also one of the grandchildren. I just want to read out an email that actually John sent to me on my birthday this year, which was in June. The email is subject of Over the Peak. And the email reads like this: they say that a man reaches his biological prime at 25. It seems that you are now challenged to prove wrong this generalization. I have no doubt you can do it, Joe. Hang in there and have a great birthday, knowing I'm close behind you biting your arm.
Hi, I'm John, and I run the Blokes in the Kitchen group at Surrey Neighbourhood House. And John rang me up after Nolene passed away and said, "I need to join your cooking group." And John did that. He fitted right in and showed me. I think he'd been cooking before because he certainly wasn't a beginner. But at one stage, we wanted to do small pies and small pie tins. And because there were so many of them, I bought him an engraver to mark the tin so we knew which tin belonged to which tin. And John confidently took over the engraver, reckoning that because he was a dentist, he couldn't know how to do it better than anyone else.
Hello, my name's Rob Watson. I'm a friend of Shelley and David, Angela, and Joe, and I own a lot of land down on the Coastal River, 100 acres or so, for quite some time. Always open a house and a bush kitchen and a rough old cabin. And John was down there on one weekend with a gathering of the family, and kids were off exploring. At one stage, we were sitting around the campfire at lunchtime, and one of the kids came back with a scalp. There didn't as much discussion as a wild dog or a fox or a kangaroo or a sheep. And the discussion continued until step forward John Heath. He invited us all to take a comfortable chair. And there ensued a lecture of some 40 minutes or so on the dentition of the wombat. He actually removed some of the teeth from his skull. He explained how he knew it was a wombat, its age, why it preferred to chew on the right side of its mouth, what sort of food it ate, and for some 40 minutes or so, a spread of humanity around that fire from age probably 5 to many years. We sat in thrall, absolutely in thrall, and we all were all wiser, were a great deal wiser for his contributions. Thank you.
I'm Dougal, Michael's son. A few things I've heard today have brought back memories to me of Uncle John. John used to turn up to our house at crazy times of the day, in the morning and in the afternoon, just to say hello. And it was really nice to see both him and Nolly at strange hours. It just shows he's a great family man, and I love being part of the Heath family as a result. John also when he turned up, and I must ask the rest of the family about this, but he'd always say something in German. There's always some Germanic, "Guten Tag," or, you know, I've got that one, but the rest of it was just incomprehensible to me. So, yeah, I can imagine. But so there's this whole sort of intellectual thing going on, but on the other hand, Clifford's friend Peter picked up the Aussiness, and John did the orthodontics, and myself and my two sisters, and we were greased with lying down on the chair and his surgery, and "open your face," that was, I think, that was the expression, open your gob, yeah, and we, I think we were the guinea pigs for John and his surgery, because I think one of the first times we went in there, it's like, Today we're going to try something. So he's rustling through his drawers. I'm thinking, what the hell's he going to bring out? Anyway, out comes the super glue. And the super glue was applied to the teeth. We'll see if this works. Great. That's good, John. But every time we went to Murdoch Street for the next 18 months, it was show us your face, I think it was, to check out how the orthodontists were going. Anyway, yeah, we're a bit scared of him, anyway. Anyway, we'll miss John. Thank you.
I'm Sophie, I'd just like to back him up on that. As much as he reminds me hugely with all these pictures of my own father and all the special things that my four cousins have been lucky to be a part of, the warmth, the encouragement, the kindness, the left to centre attitude about everything. The Heath boys taught us to look left and right and never straight ahead. It was always, when you're driving along in a car, you must make sure you look around you and not just straight ahead. But a quick little thing about, I should probably air, my parents, I don't think, even know this. John, of course, did my orthodontics, and I was lucky enough, or unlucky enough, to have braces put on my bottom teeth. And I remember in year eight thinking, there's wire left over at the back of my teeth, and they're poking into the side of my mouth. I'm sure there's going to be some knots around here. And it bothered me for probably a couple of years, and after a while I became a bit sick of it, and I jiggled my own braces off in class. I wriggled and wriggled them and slid the wires out. And no, my parents didn't even know that I'd done it, nor did John. So, of course, I turned up to a family function in Camberwell, and John, of course, said, open your cake hole. And so I opened my mouth, and of course, there's these removed braces. And he said, did we remove those braces? And I said, mm-hmm. And he just looked at me in a typical John Wayne and said, oh, I remember that. And of course, I was booked in to have all them polished and thought, it's clever, I got away from that.
And then I married an Australian, came over here, and just coincidentally met up with John and Noreen when they had, Penny was a new baby, I think, and this happened at the Melbourne Theatre Company, and we discovered we were not living too far apart, and from there on we were friends all through our lives. Our children all know each other, and I'm sorry, none of mine are able to be here today. But I feel very sad at losing Noreen and John, who are our longest Australian friends.
It's very sad that Grandpa passed so quickly, but I think the ending was quick and, like you said, he didn't suffer for a long time. The only thing that I think I'm going to carry forward from Grandpa is his zest for life and desire and need and yearning to learn more. And I think that's something people take away. Close your brain and just keep spending.
I'm Laura, Pippin's wife, and John's favourite daughter-in-law. I was called my favourite father-in-law, and he always called me his favourite daughter-in-law. It's a little thing we did. But I've known John for a very long time, since I was 17, nearly 4 years. And over all that time, I've never heard him say an unkind word. And I think that's a real testament to him. I saw him in many situations, and he was a gentleman, but we had plenty of fun and laughter together. Well, I think that's a real testament to his character.
Penny's already mentioned Dad's extraordinary memory, and the anecdote that she referred to was when I was 15 and was learning French, I had to learn a poem to recite for an oral examination, which I did, and that night at the NSA, well, I'd like you to go. And so I started and got through the first four lines and got stopped. And Dad finished it for me. He had learned 40 such poems, and that was more than 40 years ago. And just recently, 3 weeks ago, I was booked to run workshops and conference sessions in Canberra, and I heard that Dad was on the downward decline, and I so wanted to be there, and yet I didn't want to disappoint my paying customers. And so I was torn, and that French poem came back to mind so strongly, and I recalled it and re-memorized it, because it talks about the yearning for home of a Frenchman living in Italy. Le rêve qui, comme il dit, a fait un beau voyage, pour comme si tu l'as plus tranquille à 3 ans, et puis il retournait. Plein d'usage et d'exemple, vivre entre ses parents, le reste de son âge. So, Happy is the one who, like Ulysses, has had a successful journey, a successful voyage, and now has returned full of common sense and know-how to live with his parents, his family, the rest of his years. And that was just so poignant to me. I was reciting as I was driving the car and memorizing it at the pool, and I knew Dad was holding on for me, and that was the reason I stayed for a few days in Canberra and finished my commitments there. I knew he was waiting for me. And I came down and we had dinner that night together and dinner the following night together, from which the photograph was one of the slides here. And after dinner he said to me, I've had enough, it's too hard. Dad is gone and not forgotten. The atoms of star stuff he was made of are dispersed. Gone to form clouds, other creatures, other rocks, other stars. Never will those same patterns form again. The process that orchestrated those atoms to project his identity is finished. It has no archetype, no secret nature, no second life. The music from which it played was never written down. And now all that remains is pixelated snapshots and echoes in the memories of we who knew him. He is engraved upon our psyches as we recall his gentleness and reason, curiously searching out the hidden patterns of life that create such resonance, amplifying and magnifying them to bring out the delicate but thunderous symphony. The music has stopped, and though there is no chair, there is no one needing to sit in it. This dust will settle, merge with the soil, nourish new grapes, flavor new wines, spark new conversations and love affairs, and survive all wars to the end of the world. Who are we that would presume to wish it otherwise? How else could it be?